Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager, and welcome to this week's Fireside Chat. And we open up, as usual, with some stirring classical music. What happened? There was stirring, but the orchestra did not listen to me. There we go. And by the way, talking about orchestras listening to me, I will be conducting at the Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles on August 16th. So put it on your calendar if you are even contemplating being in or coming to Southern California time. It'll be an extraordinary evening. Anyway, great to be with you. And of course, the dominant issue right now is that President Trump has taken the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Change Accords. And the hysteria is reaching proportions that I have not seen in my life. There is more hysteria about this than there was after 9/11. Then there was sadness and preoccupation, but not hysteria. That's what we have here. And it has been ever since Al Gore made this into an issue, and the left has taken it all over the world. This is their big crusade to save the planet. I tweeted out something a couple of months ago. I think it was went along these lines. A religious person who says the end of the world is near is considered a nut, a religious nut. A secular person is called a religious nut. A secular person who says the end of the world is near is called an environmentalist. It's the same nutty mentality. I am convinced, I am truly convinced, that every single one of you listening, or viewing, I should say, I'm used to my radio show, every single one of you viewing, if you had not been bombarded with talk about climate change and global warming, would not even know that it's taking place. You realize your entire concern is built on faith, faith that you have been told the disinterested truth by the people who have talked to you about this from first grade through graduate school and in all our media. It's all an act of faith on your part because it hasn't changed anybody's lives. It's an amazing thing. How have you suffered as a result? As of now, the only benefits have been overwhelmingly positive. More land that can now grow food, which is a wonderful thing. More trees because there's more carbon dioxide to feed them. And nobody is dying, or fewer people are dying from frost than ever before. Far more people die from cold than from heat. But it shows you the power, even in free societies, this has been the biggest single depressing thing I've learned in the second half of my life, that people can be brainwashed in free societies. You think that people are only brainwashed in totalitarian and authoritarian societies, but it's not true. It happens just as much in free societies. Because if the media and schools tell you the same thing, then that's all you ever hear. So, of course, you're likely to believe it. Now, I don't deny for a second that the Earth is getting warmer. But that's not the issue. Nobody denies, almost nobody denies, that the Earth has been getting warmer. Climate change is perennial. Climate change existed before humanity was here and after humanity settles other planets. That's the nature of Earth. It has climate change. Sometimes it's very cold, sometimes it's very hot, sometimes it's moderately hot, sometimes moderately cold, and so on. That is the nature of the history of Earth, climate change, irrespective of anything humans do. So the issue is not, has there been any climate change? The big issues are the other two. What is the cause, and is it catastrophic? Those are the two things that matter. It doesn't matter if X is happening and X doesn't matter, then it doesn't matter. So again, there are two huge questions. Not is the Earth getting warmer, but what is causing it, and is it a catastrophe? And I don't believe it's a catastrophe, and I don't know what is causing it, and you've been told a lie. And we documented in one of the pre-university videos that it's a lie, and I don't use that word easily. It's a lie. When you're told 97% of scientists believe, you never hear the rest of the sentence. 97% of scientists believe in global warming. So what? Do they believe the other two things? That's what matters. Do they think it's going to lead to the end of life? That's what we're told. On CNN today, not on an opinion program, Wolf Blitzer said, and now with Earth hanging in the balance, President Trump has taken us away from the Paris Climate Accord. So it is now announced the Earth is in the balance. The existence of life on Earth is now, we are told, hanging in the balance. It's just not true. And there's no evidence for it. So the issue isn't, is there global warming? That is a non-issue. Yes, it is warming. Okay, fine. Not warming nearly as much as the fevered prediction said, by the way, but it's warming. Fine. And what causes it? We're not sure. There could be any number of things. What caused global warming prior to mankind ever being on the scene, let alone burning fossil fuels? But the hysteria is there because the left works on hysteria. They really believe it. They're in a permanent state of hysteria. It must be a very unhappy thing to be on the left, and I really do believe it is unhappy. There's no question leftists are less happy than conservatives. Every poll shows it, but it's obvious if you just use your own common sense. You think these kids who were taking over buildings, these left-wing kids who were demonstrating and needing safe rooms, you think they're happy kids? Any college kid who needs Play-Doh, stuffed animals, candy bars because somebody came to the campus and said something they don't agree with is not a happy person. But how could you be happy if you're in a permanent state of hysteria? My college is a rape culture. Then if you're a girl and you think you're living in a rape culture, by the way, I don't even know if they believe it, though. Would you, if you were a girl, would you attend a place that had a rape culture? What, are you out of your mind? Do parents believe it? They're going to send their daughter to a place where she has a 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 chance of being raped? That's what they claim. I would never send my daughter to such a place. It's ridiculous. I wouldn't send it if she had a 1 in 10 chance, let alone 1 in 4 or 1 in 5, whatever the current statement of sexual assault or rape is, and they use them interchangeably. I have lived through so many hysterias, so many. Heterosexual AIDS in America, we were told that AIDS was a disease that, quote, doesn't discriminate. It attacks heterosexuals just as readily as homosexuals, but it's not true. It was never true. In fact, the most likely group to get heterosexual AIDS in America, not in Africa, in America, were gay men. And the least likely group were gay women. So it's not an anti-gay statement. It's either true or not true. Gay men and intravenous drug users and their partners overwhelmingly were the people who got AIDS in the United States. But there was hysteria for years about AIDS killing vast numbers of people of every background. It's bad enough that it was killing gays. It's a terrible thing. But the hysteria was that it was killing everybody. So I've lived through all of this, and I'm completely unmoved. But you're going to hear that we're if you're young, we're sentencing you to a doomed planet. So let me just say, having children and grandchildren, I want them to live and be well as much as your parents want you to, or you want to. And I would never want to doom my kids. What do you think? People who don't buy this nonsense, we don't care about our children? Only people on the left care about their children? The irony is people on the left don't even have as many children as other people. It's really frightening. It's just frightening. And, of course, it gets people frightened. And if they're frightened, by golly, guess where they'll vote? They'll vote Democrat. There's a cynicism here. Vote for us, we'll save the planet. Vote for them, the planet will self-destruct. Who are you going to vote for? Watch our video at Prager University. Bjørn Lomborg of Denmark gives a great one just on the Paris Peace Accords. What's it called? The Paris Peace Accords won't... The Paris Climate Accords won't change the climate? Yeah. It will. You know what the effect will be by the year 20... what are we in? 2100, I think it is. By the year 2100. I think it will be 0.2... of a degree Celsius. That's what's predicted. In the meantime, we're bankrupting Western countries by spending all this money, taking it away from energy and putting it into solar panels and windmills. By the way, there's a dishonesty at the heart of the environmentalist movement. I would have much greater respect if they were for the cleanest energy that works, and that is atomic energy. But it's completely hysterical about the dangers of nuclear energy. Nuclear energy is safe. Nuclear energy is clean, but they close that down too. Angela Merkel, who is a well-intentioned but somewhat foolish woman who buys into every cliche in the book, right after Fukushima, I think was the name of the nuclear plant that melted in Japan. It was a perfect storm. Everything went wrong. She panicked and closed down all of the nuclear plants in Germany. So now it costs families vast amounts of money just to have electricity in their homes. And as the well, read the Wall Street Journal today. It's editorial on the subject, or yesterday or today. And it cites how much it is costing the Western world to buy into this, and how much it costs individual families in order to have electricity because of what they're doing in Europe. And, by the way, they are now burning more coal in Germany than before because these other things don't work. Solar panels don't work well in Germany because there's not enough solar. The sun isn't out enough in Central Europe in order to have solar panels provide your electricity. So don't believe the 97%. Very few people deny that the globe is getting warmer. It's not getting that much warmer. And there are tens of thousands... at least thousands, I don't want to say tens of thousands of scientists years ago signed petitions dissenting from the orthodoxy that you think all scientists believe in. But you, by the way, you try to be a climatologist at any university and say, you know what, it really isn't that big a deal. You will get no grants, and you will probably not be advanced. You will not get tenure at your university. I've had a number of climatologists. The biggest climatologist in the United States, Richard Lindzen of MIT, he is a legend in climatology, says this is all nonsense. Did you hear this? Did CNN report this? You can watch Richard Lindzen on a Prager University video, and if you care about truth, just show it, send it to people. Richard Lindzen, the preeminent climatologist in the U.S. of the last 40 years at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, basically calls this stuff nonsense. All right? But you're not going to see him interviewed on CNN or NBC or ABC or CBS or PBS or NPR or MSNBC. It's a shame. Okay, can I have the questions here? Don't forget to go. We got a number of Prager University on this subject. Emily, a Prager 4 student. Hi, Emily. Asks, Dennis, what are your thoughts on Kathy Griffin's horrible photo with Trump's severed head? What are your thoughts on the mainstream media's indifference to it? Well, I suspect you know my thoughts, but just to elaborate on them for just one moment, I discovered at a very young age that there's no hatred like left-wing hatred. They yell at all of us who are not on the left, we're haters, we're haters, we're haters. But the fact is, there's no hatred like left-wing hatred. Can you imagine a mainstream conservative comic holding up a severed head of Barack Obama? A, it's inconceivable. B, if it did happen, that person would have to fear for their life. They would have to walk around with bodyguards. And meanwhile, Al Franken, the senator in Minnesota, is going to tour with Kathy Griffin when his new book comes out in July. Okay? There's almost no price paid. She's been condemned, I admit it. People on the left have condemned her. I mean, how could they not? You do lose a lot of credibility if you portray the a severed head of the president and blood oozing. By the way, the president has an 11-year-old son. I just want you to think of the lack of empathy on this woman's in this woman's heart and mind and soul and psyche and conscience. Can you imagine seeing somebody tweet all over the country a picture of your father's severed head with blood hanging from it? I'm not big on trauma, but that's traumatic. I mean, my father, you know, if I'd have seen somebody holding an illustration of my father's head when I was 50 and he was 80, I would have been shaken. Imagine an 11-year-old. You don't know the amount of cruelty that pervades the left, because they talk about compassion, they talk about tolerance. Everything they talk about, unfortunately, the opposite is the case. And I want to make the point again, that's not true for liberals. Liberals are good guys. The left causes a lot of bad on earth, not liberals. Christopher asked, Dennis, I'm trying to balance my responsibilities as a provider to my family and also as a father who spends time at home. This is difficult because I do need to work long hours to provide, but I feel like I'm neglecting spending time with my wife and kids. Do you have some words of wisdom? Yeah, let me tell you this. I'll just use my own example. I saw my father not much, because he worked long hours. Would it have been nicer to spend more time with him? Absolutely. Was I in any way badly affected? No. Having a home with a mom and a dad, I know my dad is providing for us. He is a great model. A dad doesn't have to be 24/7 or even anything close to that hands-on. He has to be a model. This is critical of a father. To model for his sons and his daughters what it means to be a man. And the biggest virtue of manhood is responsibility. It's also, by the way, the sexiest thing to a woman. A responsible man is very sexy to a woman. I know this because I've done shows on this. I've asked women, not 15-year-olds, who say a great butt. But from 25 on, what does it mean for a man to be sexy? Responsible was the first thing that most of them called in to say. So I wish for your sake you could spend more time with your kids, because they grow up so fast and you're missing out of those experiences. But you can't have everything in life. And your kids understand that. And you provide for a good home, and you're a good model, and you take care of your wife, everything will be fine. Hal asked, Dennis, what are your thoughts on prayer? Do you pray to God? Ooh, Hal, I wish you didn't ask. I'm a very religious, God-fearing man, as it happens, but I'm not big on prayer, and I know why. Because though I adore my religion, Judaism, I am not a big fan of its prayer system. which is all rote. It's very, very long, and it's all written out for you. I much prefer very short, spontaneous prayer. Protestants do that very well. Christians in general do that very well. And I have a great appreciation for that, where somebody will open up a meal, blessing those present, invoking God's presence. I find that meaningful, but beyond that, I have not been big on prayer. I'll tell you what I am big on, Bible study. And I'll tell you why. I think the Bible is God's word. So would I rather say God's words and study God's words, or my words, or man's words? So I'm crazy about Bible study. The biggest project of my life, 30 plus years, is writing my commentary, which will be done in July 31st of 2019. So 2 years from now. It has to be done. It will be done. And I am explaining what it's all about. To make the first five books of the Bible, called the Torah, available to people of all faiths and no faith. Because it has been the books that have most influenced me. Rachel. Hello, Rachel. Dennis, are there some characters in the Hebrew Bible who you believe are misunderstood or get an unfair rap? Yeah, God. God gets an unfair rap. I think God is the most misunderstood and gets the most unfair rap in the Bible. I'll give you one example. God destroys the world in the time of Noah. Whether you believe in it literally or not is not relevant. God destroys the world in the book of Noah, right? In the story of Noah. Why? Because people were evil to each other. The earth was filled with violence. That's the biblical sentence. I defend God's decision. God created a world so that people would be good to each other. If they're going to be evil to each other, then there's no reason for the world. He decided to give it another go, so he saved one decent family, the family of Noah. And that hasn't turned out too well either. But in any event, that's a good example. Oh, what kind of God is that? A God who destroys the world? I think it's a beautiful God. He's sick of people being evil to each other. Just for the record, by the way, my extremely intelligent, extremely thoughtful wife thinks God shouldn't have even saved Noah. There's so much evil in the world, she doesn't think it was worthy of even for that. It's an interesting discussion. Anyway, one of the reasons I'm writing my commentary is to explain God as best as I can and to show what a great character in the Bible God is. J.M. asked, Dennis, what makes monotheism superior to polytheism? A number of things. The biggest is one God is one morality. Two gods is two moralities. Simple as that. If there's more than one God, then whatever God A says is what God A says, and whatever God B says is what God B says. That doesn't work. Also, if there is more than one God, then you don't have order in the universe, because each God is there. They always compete. They compete for the affections of man. They even compete for the sex with human beings. Very common sex between God and the gods and the human beings in the ancient world. And monotheism opened the way ultimately for science, because there is a unifying factor that unites all of reality and not competing factors. And that ultimately opened the gates for science. Antonio. Hello, Antonio. Dennis, do you believe euthanasia should be legal? Do you think it is sometimes ethical? I'll start with the second one first. Yes, it is sometimes ethical. If someone is in horrific pain that cannot be alleviated and is terminally ill, and says to the doctor, "Doctor, all I'm doing is suffering, horrific suffering. I can do nothing else but lie in bed and suffer. That is the extent of my life. And it does God no credit, it does me no credit, it does life no credit for me to go on. I am grateful for all the years that I had it good. It is time for me to go." I'm not going to say that's not ethical. I'm against suicide in 99% of cases, but you ask sometimes is 1%. Yes, I think it is. Now, that's different from making it legal. That's a problem, because once it's legal, you will end up with a slippery slope where, who knows, you know, the family may say, you know, dad's not feeling good, let's get rid of him. You know, because the kids don't want to be bothered any longer with the bills or whatever it might be, or just, you know, want to get the inheritance. Who knows? That's a problem. Some things are not perfectly soluble. What should be is, doctors should be allowed, with consultation with ethical figures, ideally clergy, and with the family, and with the individual first and foremost, and you should leave a living will. Everyone should have one. What's to be done in case of horrific disease and pain, etc. And then you don't prosecute the doctor. It's not the same as making something legal. I feel that way about prostitution, for example. I don't want it to be legal, but I don't think it should always be prosecuted. I think trafficking needs to be prosecuted. But consenting adults, I don't think that's what we need to use police for. But that's different. Not pursuing something criminally is not the same as making it legal. Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Dennis, what are your thoughts on AA and 12-step? I am in love with AA and 12-step. I do not have personal experience with it. I've never been addicted, thank God. But I know, I do know people who have, and I first learned about it through callers to my radio show. The wisdom that these people had, thanks to AA and all the other anonymous programs and 12-step programs generally, was astonishing. They're like wisdom factories. And by the way, it's one of my many challenges to atheists or secularists. How come the only massively successful programs keeping people sober are based on God, or higher power, if you will? But it was God originally, and is God for most people. There is no secular version, or maybe there is, but it's not nearly as successful. So I think they're great. Dave, hi Dave, asks, Dennis, how should I decide which college I'd be okay with my child attending? What factors do you think I should consider? Okay, I have a few general rules for parents. One, not in order of importance. Send your child to the cheapest college you can find. If you're very rich, it doesn't matter, but most people are not very rich. And it's a colossal waste of money in many cases to spend a lot of money on college. Number two, don't send them right out of high school. They should do something worldly and mature. The more mature you are when you go to college, the less likely you are to be indoctrinated. The purpose of 99% of our colleges is to produce committed leftists. It is not to produce scholars. It is not to produce mature people or wise people. It is to produce non-thinking people of the left. I'm sorry. I wish it weren't the case. I love the life of the mind. I love the intellect. I love books. But the university has become an indoctrination center. The only difference between a Christian seminary and a university is that the Christian seminary is honest. The Christian seminary says we're here to produce committed Christians, but the university does not admit that it's there to produce committed leftists. That's the big difference. Your child should spend time between high school and college maturing, ideally through work, through good travel, or whatever else it might be, and you better be very certain that your kids' values are intact before they go. The number of parents with traditional ethical moral values whose kids come home after 1 or 2 years at college with contempt for their parents' values is unfortunately very high. Final question is from Valerie. Hi, Valerie. Dennis, when I watch you on CNN, I notice that you're able to cut to the core of an issue, while many of the other guests are often emotional and use ad hominem attacks. So how are you able to think and speak clearly about big issues? Because I love clarity, like people love their spouses and their children. What can I tell you? I do. I've been crazed. I want to know what is true. I want to know what is right. I care about clarity. My brain, I have trained it to think of that and not get distracted by people yelling. I'll give you an interesting, totally separate example, but it's related. For the first time, oddly enough, in all of my decades as a public figure, for the first time, somebody came over to me and just cursed me to my face. I mean, prolonged. It happened this week at my gym, an upscale gym. I just came in from my hour with my trainer, come into the men's locker room, sit down on the bench, and another guy in that section of the locker room looks at me and he goes, "Are you who I think you are?" So I get that question a lot. And I put out my hand to shake it. He doesn't shake it. And then just says, "You're an effing piece of S." And then every single expletive available in the English language, he's yelling at me. The man was going nutty. I didn't get excited. All I had was contempt for him. I said almost nothing. I just said, "I want you to know that all you're succeeding in doing is confirming me in my views." That was all I said, except one more time when he went to another section and still yelled out all these curses at me. I said, "You know, there are other people here." And I told the managers of the workout place today, just today. Was it today? Yeah, I worked out today, right. And I went there after my workout and after I showered and dressed, and I went and I said, "You know, there's this guy here," and I told him what time it was, because it wasn't my normal time of working out, so that's probably the reason I haven't met this wonderful human being before. And it was very interesting, because one of the managers said, "Oh, I caught the tail end of that," which I was very relieved, so he could, you know, knew I wasn't making any of this up. And then he said at one point, he said, "I can't believe how calmly you reacted." This I've trained myself to do. Because if calm wins the day, it's just a rule worth knowing. If I'd have started cursing him back, I'd have lost. He'd have been thrilled that I did it. And imagine if there are a million people listening. Like, you know, whatever the numbers are, I don't know what the numbers are at CNN, but and of course I'm not cursed at, but I'm yelled at, and I just calmly answer, and I don't let myself get distracted by the topic that they will raise to change the topic. That's what people do all the time. They change the topic. And I will persevere on what I have said until there is clarity, and we can then move on. But you gotta train yourself. It's worth doing. So with that, just want to thank you, and I hope to see you next week. Don't forget the videos on climate change, even specifically on the Paris Accords, at PragerUniversity.com. And by the way, I'm making a movie with Adam Carolla on what's happening at our universities. And you can see the trailer and help out if you like at nosafespaces.com. But that and PragerUniversity.com, my radio show, and I stay busy. Thanks a million. Great to be with you.